And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Nerys.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. For Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
We've lost all contact with the space station.
What the hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel and Andrew Layla.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast. Our mission, to journey through the wormhole and rewatch every single episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. It'll only take us, about 14 years or so, we've got nothing going on for the next two decades. I am Andrew Leyland, and I am joined by two of the bestest people in podcasting, Mr. Sean Engel.
Hello, everyone.
And Mr. Paul Spataro.
Howdy.
Today's episode will be focusing primarily, although there'll probably be divergence and tangents because it's a Two True Freak show, on the episode past prologue. But do we have anything to talk about before we get to that?
I didn't mention this on the last episode we did. I did finally pony up and order online my Star Trek Deep Space Nine companion, so that should be coming in the mail. It probably should be here by the time this episode airs. So I'm looking forward to going through it and, you know, getting a little tidbits and pieces about it. Plus, also, it's supposedly a nice little way to sort of do cheats on the synopses. So I'm always down with that as well.
It's not a little book. I've got it in my hand now. It's quite a hefty tome.
Well, good, because I need some good reading. I haven't read a good book in a while, so I'll be ready to check that out once it comes.
And I've dug out my Trekker's Guide to Deep Space Nine, complete, unauthorized, and uncensored, which goes through the first five seasons. So I'm also going to try and dig in there a little for different episodes as we do them, and see if I can get any creative insight or anything like that I can add to the show. And if it's good, I'll be sharing with you guys whatever tidbits it gives us.
Well, it's good to know that there's a bunch of material out there on this show, so there's good ancillary stuff talking about the show. That's nice to hear.
And for those of you who don't think that we do our homework and actually try to come with an intelligent point of view, hey, you're probably right, but we got books anyway.
Why bother? Books do it for us.
Exactly.
Why do the work ourselves? I'm still waiting for my unpaid DeMonzo Corp intern.
Yeah, that'll be coming in the mail, along with the Asian hookers. Those will be coming as well. So,
should we go straight into it then?
Yes, we shall.
Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, a Bajoran terrorist seeks refuge on board the space station.
He has committed brutal acts of destruction.
I want Bajor for Bajorans.
But where do Kira's loyalties lie?
You expect me to commit some act of violence against the Federation?
There is an armed bilithium explosive device on board this ship. No more wormhole, no more Federation.
Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Okay, past prologue originally aired on or around January 10th, 1993, because this was a syndicated show. It was written by Catherine Powers and directed by Vindrik Kolb. As pointed out, I am getting my synopsis from the Deep Space Nine Companion by Terry J. Erdman with Paula Block. A quiet cup of Tarkalian tea turns into an exciting encounter for Dr. Bashir when the station's last remaining Cardassian, a tailor named Garak, introduces him to the physician in the Replimat. Recalling that the Cardassian is rumored to be a spy, Bashir rushes to Ops to inform Sisko of the meeting. But Sisko and the others are distracted by the appearance of a small Bajoran craft that is being pursued by a Cardassian war vessel. When the Bajoran requests assistance, O'Brien beams the badly injured pilot to Ops, and Kira recognises him as Tana Loss, an acquaintance of hers from the Bajoran underground. The captain of the Cardassian ship, Gul'dinar, demands that Sisko turn over Tana, whom he says is a member of the Bajoran terrorist group the Kon'mar. But when Tana claims to have renounced his association with the group, Sisko has no choice but to grant his request for asylum. Not long afterwards, Odo alerts Sisko to the fact that the Klingon sisters, Lursa and Be'etor, have arrived at DS9, and that they seem to be awaiting something or someone. Sisko asks Odo to keep an eye on them, whilst at the same time, Garak hints to Bashir that the Doctor should do the same. Disguised as a rat, Odo observes the sisters meeting with Tana and demanding payment for an undisclosed item. Sisko gives Kira approval to help Tumo Kon'mar members obtain asylum, but when Odo tells Sisko about the conversation between Tana and the Klingons, the commander can't help wondering if there is a connection. In the meantime, the two sisters visit Garak to discuss the price the Cardassians might be willing to pay for the return of Tana. And in Tana's quarters, Kira is stunned to discover that her old ally is still loyal to the Kon'mar, and that his purpose in coming to the station was to gain her assistance in a plan to free Bajor. Troubled, Kira turns to Odo for advice. The conversation makes her realise that she is no longer the person she once was, and she must choose new loyalties. Garak again goes to Bashir, this time alerting him to potential Kon'mar activity on the station. The Cardassian suggests that Bashir may find out more if he visits the tailor shop that evening at a specific time. And that night, hidden from view, Bashir listens as Garak gets the sisters to reveal that they are selling Tana a cylinder of Betrillium, a component required for the construction of a powerful bomb. The command crew discuss the situation, and Sisko agrees to let Kira take Tana to meet the Klingon sisters for their agreed-upon exchange. Sisko and O'Brien will follow in a different runabout. The exchange is made, and Cardassian forces, alerted by Garak, appear and threaten to fire upon Kira and Tana. In return, Tana threatens to explode his bomb right there if either the Cardassians or Sisko approach, and they are forced to allow him to proceed. Tana informs Kira that his target is the wormhole, where he plans to destroy with the bomb, thus diminishing Bajor's importance to both the Federation and the Cardassians, and forcing both groups to leave the planet alone. But Kira is able to delay the release of the weapon long enough so that the bomb is detonated harmlessly in the Gamma Quadrant. Tana is arrested, and Kira is left to ponder if she made the right decision for her people. Credits.
Now, unlike the last episode, which the story was kind of thin, I liked the story in this one as well as the character development. I thought this was a significantly better episode overall.
Yes, you've got to wonder why they transpose the order of these two in the screening of them, because Past Prologue is a much stronger episode. No, they did a Past Prologue second. I told you I was confused about this. Because this is far stronger than the other one. The plot is wonderfully nuanced, dealing as it does with the idea that there is a difference between a terrorist and a freedom fighter. And Kira gets to shine. Nana Vista gets to take off in the role for really the first time. Arguably, we found problems with her performance in the pilot episode, largely, I think, down to the writing. I don't know it was necessarily anything to do with her. They hadn't really got a lock on Kira's character yet. But essentially, in this episode, we get the central conflict at the heart of what Kira is. Yes, she was a terrorist from the point of view of the Cardassians, but as far as she was concerned, she was fighting for Bajoran independence. And here, we see her realise that what she was doing was noble and just.
Tana.
Yeah, what the Kon'mar is doing is terrorism, pure and simple. And you can play it all. When this Urd, you will have had obviously parallels with the Northern Ireland situation and Palestine, what was going on in Palestine. Since this Urd, this episode just suddenly has so much more resonance than it did when it was originally released in 1993. And it made it even more powerful 20-odd years down the line than it was when it originally was on the television. And it's beautifully performed. It's the first appearance of Andy Robertson as Garak, who is just sublime throughout this entire episode. Nana Visitor proves that she was DS9's hidden weapon. I maintain she was probably the strongest actress in the show. And it's just brilliant. It's an absolutely top-notch episode from top to bottom.
Yeah, where the last episode of Man Alone did have character moments and character building, and not to unduly malign it, because it was an enjoyable standalone episode on its own, this one has the character moments and world building, which they didn't really have in the last one at all. The last one was much, much more self-contained. This one, you can see the fact that there's going to be repercussions to what's going on in this station that are going to resonate throughout the series. The significance of the wormhole, the significance of civil unrest on Bajor itself, and how Kira's being pulled in different directions by her own people, and on top of that, being pulled by in another direction by the Federation. So this is a layered episode that just has so much going on. But my first note when I watched this episode was Garak! ! Already enigmatic.
Yeah, that was pretty much my first, from the opening scene, having, Andrew Robinson in all that wonderful makeup, just he sells this character, and Garak is my favorite secondary character outside of the main cast. Every word that he says is dripping with subtext. There is there's always some ulterior meaning to what he says, and it's his character is perfect from the beginning, and it's going to make me kind of sad because I know he doesn't play much of a part in the rest of these episodes until we get later on in season 2, season 3 at least.
Yeah, it's one of the, you look back on the show and you think he's in it a lot more than he is because of the impact that he has on the series. He walks into this episode, and he steals it. Quite clearly, quite plainly, from under the noses of pretty much everyone he shows a scene with, he walks away with it. But to give Alexander Siddig credit, he lets him steal the scene.
Mm-hmm.
He's smart enough as an actor to know, if you've got somebody who's doing that, then I have to downplay it slightly, which he does. But he's giddy with excitement at the prospect that he's just spoken to a spy, and this spy's on the station, and this spy may be up to something. And the scene where he runs to Ops, like a little 6-year-old boy on Christmas Day, to tell Sisko what's going on, and Sisko mocks him openly in front of the crew, but he does it in such a way Bashir doesn't realise that's what he's doing. It's beautifully performed by everybody, and Bashir's on his A game in this one, and his naivety and his enthusiasm plays for the character instead of against it, and you end up seeing it's entirely possible Garak's picked him deliberately for this, for his naivety, mm-hmm. and for his youthfulness. And you know Garak's playing him throughout the entire show, but he doesn't know that. And it's beautiful, absolutely wonderfully performed and written by everyone involved, but particularly Andy Robinson. If you only know him from Dirty Harry, his performance in this was just a revelation. Like you say, everything he says has a double meaning to it. He's playing simple Garak, so you know he's not playing and he's not simple. And it's just a gorgeous performance. He was allowed to essentially just create his own character, and he does a brilliant job with it.
Yeah, I thought Bashir, this is the first time where I started seeing a little bit of a layer to Bashir of the episodes we've done so far, because he's shown as quite intelligent but not sophisticated. So now he isn't just a simple caricature anymore. Now he's starting to actually develop into something. And I like that.
Well, he's a greenhorn, isn't he? He's straight out of Starfleet Academy. He's looking for fortune and glory. And the rest of the crew
has no real life experience.
Yeah, exactly. The rest of the crew is seasoned enough to know that if you want fortune and glory, dude, you don't come to a space station in the middle of nowhere. But he thinks that's where the action's going to be.
It's kind of, because I'm a gamer at heart, or I used to be a gamer, there's a difference between intelligence and wisdom. And right now, Bashir may be a person who has a lot of intelligence, but he doesn't have any wisdom. He's not worldly wise. He's not able to understand the subtleties of what's going on. When Garrick intimates to him that he needs to come to his tailor shop and try on a suit at exactly 2055 hours, he doesn't get it. He's like, why do you want me to try on a suit? And he goes to Sisko, and Sisko immediately realizes that, this might be code. I think you should go try on a suit at 2055 hours. And it's brilliant. And we'll see this development of, Garrick's character more throughout the show, and the relationship that'll be built up because of this episode between Garrick and Bashir. And I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's the bits between Bashir and Garrick, where they will play up a lot more on them as the series goes along. But I think my favourite scene in the episode was Bashir in the tailor shop actually going, oh, well, I may actually try this suit on, mm-hmm. because he's too stupid to realise that's what he's there for, to just eavesdrop. But the other great scene is when Sisko calls Garrick and says, I want to be measured for a suit right now. And Garrick comes in and they're discussing all these things openly in front of him, so that he will then go away and tell who he needs to tell. And they all know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this one was just so clever in how it was written and how the characters interacted with each other. And that, unlike the last episode, which ended with a tedious speech about, oh, are we really going to do this? Are we really going to hate on this person? Spelling out the subtext for the most stupid members of the audience. This one doesn't do that at any point. You're following along with the plot, and it's being revealed to you as you're watching it. There's no pointless exposition in this one. And what's great about this is Kira's central dilemma is interesting, and it's fascinating, and it takes on even more power 20 years on than it did when it aired.
And as I started to allude to, I love the fact that she's not just being pulled in two directions. I believe she's being pulled in three directions. There's overall her loyalty to Bajor, there's her loyalty to these Bajoran terrorists, and there's her loyalty to the station and what's going on there. And she's clearly torn over it all, because she can't pinpoint, other than the Cardassians, who she deems the enemy right now. She obviously her loyalty is to Bajor, but she doesn't know who to align herself to make that loyalty work. To the point where she's going over Sisko's head to aid, what's his name, Tanar, but then has to go against him because she finds out that he's just too much of a terrorist, and his methods are beyond what she would consider. So there's just a lot going on there for her character, and I think her acting is brilliant in it.
One of the scenes that I'd like to talk about, since you mentioned, Kira going over Sisko's head, the admiral that Kira went to was actually, I believe, Leonard Nimoy's wife in real life, and she just did a little guest spot. Now, admirals are, a dime a dozen in Star Trek, and you'll see them come and go. There's never any specific one, but I thought that was kind of interesting. I also liked that the aftermath of that, after the admiral contacted Sisko, when Sisko and Kira were interacting for the first time after that, I loved how Sisko sort of played up that sort of, silent yet reserved, yet, very clipped acting with her, and how he finally called her out on it, said, look, if you ever go over my head again, I will have your head on a platter. And I thought that was, Sisko really was able to shine in this episode. Avery Brooks was marvelous in this. But everyone, I think, really had a pretty good showing in this.
Yeah, I think this is, so far of the ones we've done, including Emissary, this is the one where the acting is starting to really shine. They're starting to understand their characters. They're starting to put a little subtext to the performance. They're not just doing their lines. You're starting to get a feeling for what's going on, behind the words. And I really like that.
I love Kira's actions throughout this entire episode. Sisko essentially gives her freedom to do what she needs to do here, and she still does the runaround with him and goes and talks to the admiral for him. He should have busted her back down to Ensign there, and if she'd been in Starfleet, he probably could have done. As it is, he just makes it quite clear, you never do that to me again. And it's starting to set the groundwork that these aren't all going to be friends. One of my problems with Next Generation is the core cast are all friends, which leads to scenes where Commander Riker especially comes across as a huge asshole when you see him with other members of the crew. He's an utter twat to an awful lot of them, but when it's his friend who needs something, like Worf or Geordi, he'll break the rules. And here we see from the get-go, these aren't friends, these are people that are serving together. And Sisko whacks Kira down, and he should have done. What she did was wrong.
Yeah, but, he could have come down on her much harder. And, yes. But I think he also, you know, again, it's a little bit of this, the way it's written. He doesn't immediately seek her out and smack her down. He acts first and shows her, look, I'm going to do what's right. But then lets her know, I'm not doing this because you made that phone call. And I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to back off from you on doing what's right. I'm going to do what's right based on my call, not yours. This isn't a democracy.
Mm. Because her current, although she's not Starfleet, which does beg the interesting question of whether Sisko could have done something like smack her down a couple of ranks for what she did.
Her, I think he could have had her removed from the
He could have had her removed from that position at the very least, yeah. Her job, though, is to be his first officer. Therefore, she has to follow his orders. That's the way it works. And she's already showing that she's not necessarily the right person for the job. But as the episode goes along, you realize that she's exactly the right person for the job because of her conflicting opinions and emotions.
Mm-hmm. And that's we've discussed this before on the show. That's what's so great about it is you have these people coming from different perspectives and that will clash with each other, that their ideals will conflict. So it works better here, and it gives, you know, conflict is always better for a show rather than it being the Star Trek The Next Generation where everyone was just, you know, oh, I agree with you, and then they listen to Worf and Worf says something, you know, that's disagreeing, and they completely forget what Worf is saying.
Now, in my notes, I don't recall off the top of my head exactly when it occurred, but there was a Morn sighting. Just to
yes, Morn was in this episode. I think it was probably one of the scenes in the bar. You've got to assume
that's going out on a limb. Sure.
I know that's probably surprising. No, he was actually on the holodeck. No, I want to say it was nice, even though it was kind of, you know, just more sort of guest casting that you had Lursa and Betor here on the show. That was nice. And their cleavage, that was nice as well. I've got to admit that.
That makes no sense. The Klingon warriors, I don't care that they're women. There is no way on God's green space station they would have a big hole over their chest for somebody to drive a knife through.
Maybe it's a way to distract them. You know, maybe it's, you know, kind of the
if you're in a fight with somebody, you're not being distracted, you're going to kill them. And they've got this big gap in the middle of their armor that says, hey, stab us here. No, it's stupid. It's an incredibly bad piece of design work.
From a practical point of view, they would never do that.
Well, I wasn't thinking practically, I guess.
I understand. No,
you were thinking, oh, they're women. Oh, they're a bit hot. But well, they're not. They're Klingon warriors.
Well, yeah.
And look from the neck up. They're not hot at all.
Yeah, that's true. I'll that. Yeah, I wasn't.
Well, when Riker was on the ship of the Klingons, he wasn't looking at the head up, was he?
True. I with them, I like the way they were written because they are not traditional Klingons. They have no honor, and they showed that by the double cross that they worked out, and just, you know, they're clearly villains, and they're totally unapologetic for being villains, and they have no problem just doing whatever serves their purposes, and so, you know, they're a little two dimensional actually, but they're fun.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with some mustache twirling villainy, and I think that as we go along we'll get that with Deep Space Nine, but we'll get it buried within a character. Gul Dukat is capable of mustache twirling when he has to, but there's nothing wrong with having some two-dimensional bad guys in it, and I don't mind Lursa and Beato. They never really floated my boat either way. I could take or leave them, but it is nice.
I wonder
to
if they were put in here to be a little bit of a you know, an attraction for fans of TNG to say, hey, look, there's characters that you'd recognize.
Yeah, because they'd already been on Next Generation at this point, hadn't they? And they would be in it again before they crop up in Generations.
They already mentioned that they had, tried to seize power and everything. So their character's been established. And since we're, either the second or third episode in, people might not be watching the show. So to give sort of callbacks or to give guest spots from characters that are established on the previous show it's completely understandable.
It's also the best kind of Star Trek in that it leaves you asking questions after the episode is over. And this one does ask the question of whether or not terrorism is a legitimate form of fighting back. And it's an extremely interesting question to raise in what is looked at by an awful lot of people as being frivolous popcorn entertainment. Does it work or does it not work? Does it get you what you want or are you better negotiating? Does that get you what you want better? It's
clearly
a fascinating
the terrorists,
question.
Clearly the terrorists view themselves not as terrorists but as freedom fighters.
Exactly, and that's you can look at the entire history where anybody has used terrorism to get what they want. The people on that side do not consider themselves terrorists, and I found it really fascinating here that Kira looked back on what she did and was able to say, "Yeah, I was a terrorist," but that doesn't make what she was doing wrong. It's such an interesting and fascinating question for the show to throw up. Especially now.
Yeah. Well, and there were definite shades of gray that Kira did. She was like, well, I'm not, her terrorism had, wasn't as extreme as what Tana was trying to get to. You kind of felt that, yes, she may have targeted Cardassian outpost and because they are an occupying force, but she didn't go to the levels that this Khan Maw group. And again, the shades of gray that this show delves into, make it so much more of an interesting show to watch than, the very, kind of bland sort of episodes that you'd be getting in this first season of Next Gen. So the fact that, two, three episodes in, we're getting these incredible quandaries in these storylines, it's just, it's a credit to the writers of the show.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's a fascinating discussion. I grew up in the UK. I'm not going to come as a surprise to you with the accent.
Surprise.
And in the 70s, the IRA were a real clear and present terrorist threat. I've grown up not miles away from where bombs have exploded and destroyed things. And so the question you ask them is, did doing that get them what they want? Or did eventually getting around the negotiation table in the early 1990s get them what they want? Or did one lead to the other? And there are no easy answers to these questions, are there? And Star Trek, certainly the Next Generation at this point, wasn't asking questions as deep as this.
Oh, no. And it's a credit to the show that they're willing to tackle these things and how prescient this episode feels, like you said, 20 years out. Terrorism is a major, policy ideal that, all governments are having to deal with. We're all... if not at least concerned about the possibility of terrorism. It may not be completely on our minds, 24/7, but it's something that we keep in mind, in our everyday, in our everyday lives. If we have to travel, anywhere, there's procedures that we have to go through. And the fact that, this sort of goofy sci-fi show addresses it and addresses it in such an intelligent adult manner is just again a credit to the fact that it's not your typical Star Trek show.
No, it's a fascinating thing, and it also reminds me there's a radical Muslim preacher over here in the UK that we were trying to deport back to Jordan, and the Court of Human Rights weren't allowing us to do that because the Jordanese authorities have a history of torturing the suspects. So essentially, we would be giving this guy who was inciting hate in our country back to his country where they would torture him. And there was this whole moral quandary of, well, if we give him back, we know what they're going to do to him. But why he's over here, he's doing this. And this episode reminded me a little bit of that as well, which obviously can't have been on the minds of the writers because this was 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I guess things like that are problems that come up anytime you have battles with freedoms against people who are extremists. That's a common dilemma. Mm. So
it's fascinating that this episode would raise that question, and there's a certain element of me that's a little bit saddened that this episode has become more topical over the past 20 years rather than less.
Absolutely. it's not the kind of thing you want to come to pass. You don't want to watch a dystopian show and say, yeah, well, that's our future.
Yeah, and it's. I mean, I was fascinated by the fact that they had the balls to ask this question. And I was fascinated by the fact that, I mean, this is coming at it now, 20 years later, that they have a character like this on the show that is inherently interesting from our point of view now. But I was, like I say, saddened that in 20 years it's become more prophetic, not less. And I suppose that's the problem with science fiction, isn't it? If they get it right, there's a real possibility it will come to pass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But to again use the fact that we know where this show goes, this isn't going to be an issue that's just going to be, you know, this wasn't a very special episode of Deep Space Nine, and now we're by that issue and let's go on to other things. This is something that's going to be revisited over the course of the series.
Yeah.
The whole terrorism aspect of it. And done, I think, much, much better than it was ever done in TNG with the Maquis,
or the High Ground, which was god awful.
Oh yeah.
If you want a simplistic portrayal of terrorism, go and watch that episode. If you want
a more nuanced one, watch this.
I was just saying, if you want a more nuanced approach, watch this.
But the same thing even with Voyager. That's one of the things that I felt they did wrong on that show was, you know, you mix the two crews from the Federation ship and the Maquis ship. And you could have had some real stories that explored the differences in how they viewed things and their ideals. And instead, they all started to get along very, very quickly. And I felt that was a missed opportunity. Well, just a couple of... go ahead, Sean.
I was going to say, I would put the fact that a lot of things with Voyager were missed opportunities, unfortunately. I mean... I don't think they had the writing staff. I don't think they had, you know, the stories that Deep Space Nine had. I mean, and maybe because Deep Space Nine was the last show of the new series of Trek to actually be syndicated, because Voyager and Enterprise were both owned by a network, maybe there was more network interference, which didn't allow them to tackle subjects like these in the way that Deep Space Nine does, so... Maybe that's part of it as well, but yeah, it never just worked out as well, you know, dealing with these sort of heady topics on the other shows.
I don't think the premise of the other shows lent themselves to this, as we discussed in the last episode. By its nature, Next Gen, Voyager, and the original Trek end with the ship voyaging off to the next adventure. By staying here, we're exploring what Bajor is going to become now.
I had a couple other notes on this show. When they show the Cardassian captain on the viewer, the lighting on him makes him look particularly demonic, which I thought served to set up the fact that you have not only the conflict between the Bajoran terrorists and the just Bajoran, you know, true freedom fighters as opposed to terrorists, but you also had the Cardassians who were looking to take advantage of any situation they could, and I think that they were showing, look how villainous this guy looks, and then, you know, it almost justifies the activities of the terrorists, or at least it gives you a basis to make an argument that their actions are justified, but then, you know, you take it from there and they show you that they're not justified. So I thought there was a lot of, again, depth in the writing.
You're kind of at the end supposed to believe that the terrorists are the bad guys in this, but you're never once led to believe that the Bajorans are actually the good guys. There's you know, even though these terrorists are fighting against the Bajorans, and you're not led to think that the Bajorans are supposed to be, oh, you know, are oppressed, or that this Khan Maw group is actually legitimized by trying to destroy the wormhole or trying to get this, you know, bomb to blow something up.
No, you're not. But what I think that they're doing is they're showing you the extremes of different things and how against what the Bajorans would view as, Cardassian oppression, how it might lead somebody to an extremist act, which is incorrect. And, you know, almost justifying making the villains more three-dimensional instead of just, oh, yeah, they're terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like that. I thought that was, again, it was some depth to the writing, I thought. Also in the episode, I thought, again, they're building on the relationship. I think you saw a little bit more of the bond between Odo and Kira as it went along. And again, knowing where things are going to go, that seems to stand out to me more.
Yeah, the scene of theirs in the office was really great, where Kira sort of examines, what she's done, and examines her past and examines where she is now and determines what she wants to do. And Odo's the person who realizes that her conflict is going to lead her not to side with this terrorist group. And he's the one who contacts Sisko and says she's ready to help out.
Right. Right. And again, last episode, Odo and Sisko were at odds. So it's showing, there's a little bit of an uneasy relationship, but it's developing between some of the characters. My last note on this one was it's the one negative I had with the episode. I didn't like that at the end, Kira kind of turns into a damsel in distress. She's in the ship and she's being held hostage. I mean, she does things to get out of that situation, but I didn't like the fact that she was put in that position in the first place. I don't want to.
She's better than that.
Of a character for that.
Yeah, there's an interesting little subtlety that's mentioned in the Deep Space Nine companion book that Garak works in a tailor's shop, and the man from Uncle, they used to have to enter Uncle through a tailor's shop.
Hmm.
Which they said they did deliberately. I thought that was funny.
It's like in S.H.I.E.L.D. going through the barbershop.
Yeah. I thought that was funny, that was a deliberate nod to the man from Uncle. They had to get into the spy headquarters by going through a tailor shop, and here the tailor shop is owned by a spy. I liked it.
Well, I just like anything with Garak. I wish, I can't wait until we get more episodes with him, and unfortunately, yeah, we're going to have to sit through ones without him, but yeah, again, he's my favorite secondary character, so there you go.
All right. You guys have any more on this one, or should we go to email?
Let's go ahead and go to email. Who wants to...
We've not said what we thought of it.
Oh. I think we did, but I just want to summarize it.
Yeah, overall, what was our impressions of the episode?
So far, I think for me, this was perhaps the most nuanced, the most relevant, had some of the best character interaction. The story was really good. Overall, this is just an A episode. If I were to give it a letter grade. Oh, but that's back to the bins. I'm sorry.
What did you think of the cover?
The cover? Oh, I'll have to give that a B-.
How many orbs would you give it?
Out of 72 orbs, I'd give it 67.
My head hurts now.
Yeah.
A nice round number. Yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was riveting. I thought it was fantastic. I like science fiction I like science fiction to be as stupid as Buck Rogers in the 25th century, but I also like science fiction that asks hard questions and, more importantly, doesn't think itself able to answer them.
Yes.
Because these aren't questions that have easy answers. And I thought this was easily the best one we've watched so far. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, I give Emissary... some points just for the fact that it's the introduction episode, the pilot episode, is going to get points for that. But on just an episode level, this is really as close to perfect as you could see in many respects. It gets the characters right. It's as I said earlier, it's world building and character building. The acting is top notch. And it's got Garak in it.
mean, yes.
There's very little I can say. But like that, my damsel in distress comment was my only negative note that I wrote while I watched it for the second consecutive time, because I watched it once to watch it, and then I watched it a second time to take notes. And that was my only negative in the episode, was that particular aspect of it. So I guess, you know, it's not perfect because I did have a negative about it, but it's really darn close to it.
Mm. And Kira's hot as hell in it.
Yeah, I noticed there really wasn't that much Dax in this. This was specifically a Kira episode. So yeah, she did get the chance to look kind of hot in here, I guess.
You know, if we're going to be superficial.
Well, why not? I got to talk about, you know, Klingon boobs. So yeah, we'll talk about, I wouldn't mind talking about, you know, not a visitor. But do we want to go ahead and jump into a couple of emails? We've got a couple from, we've got one from Luke Jack. Do you want to do the Luke Jack and Eddie one, Andy?
Yeah, okay, I'll do Luke's email. It's simply titled Emissary. Sean, Andy, and
Paul. Whoa. Slow down there, cowboy.
Okay, sorry.
Who's the email from?
Luke Giaconetti. Some say that he much prefers the space station in Babylon 5 to Deep Space Nine. And that, given the choice, he'd prefer Deep Space Station K7 over any of them. All we know is he's called Luke Giaconetti.
Yay.
Thank you, my friend.
Sean, Andy, and Paul. That was off the top of my head. Sean, Andy, and Paul. I do not approve of the way he's got those names written, but whatever.
Yeah. Despite I agree.
Yeah, because if you take the initials, it's SAB.
Maybe he did that deliberately. Despite being a classic Trek fan as a young kid, I failed to be interested in Next Gen when it first aired. As I said in an earlier email, I got into the Next Gen era of Star Trek partway through the final season of that show. So these early episodes, including Emissary, were a complete blind spot for me. The broad, important concepts introduced in this show, the Bajoran occupation, Sisko's background, the wormhole aliens, and so forth, were all head-scratchers for me, which I had to sort of figure out on my own. I had to wait for the first DS9-centric double issue of Cine Fantastique to read the summaries of the episodes I had missed, this being pre-internet. And while that gave me some background, I still felt fairly confused. I'd get more caught up as I went along and took a bigger interest in the show with the introduction of the Jem'Hadar and the Dominion, but I think this unstable foundation combined with the reliance of the ongoing plots made it, like most modern science fiction shows, difficult to get into once you'd missed the early ones. Unlike nowadays, there was no video on demand. There was only Channel 11 WPIX, and hoping that the reruns would air. And you hoped that the reruns would air so you could see them or tape them. Eventually, with Voyager being the more interesting, accessible show to me, I dropped off watching for the first part. First off, yeah, those Cine Fantastiques are brilliant. If you can get hold of them, Cine Fantastique was a magnificent magazine around the early 90s, and they used to do double issues every year that focused on Star Trek and Deep Space Nine and would do episode guides and reviews and behind the scenes stuff, and they're great. If you can find them, they're well worth tracking down.
And as long as you interrupted Luke's letter, I disagree with, what does he call it, an unstable foundation of the show. I mean, he hits on, you know, the Bajoran occupation, Sisko's background, the wormhole aliens. I think it's a pretty solid foundation, and I think they just developed it more with the Jem'Hadar and the Dominion. I think they went further with it all, but I think it's a pretty solid foundation. I don't think it's unstable.
See, I read that as the unstable foundation as him as a viewer, because he'd missed the early episodes, he didn't quite know what was going on.
Hmm. Oh, okay. But I thought he was saying that the show was, you know, a little bit lacking direction or something of along those lines.
Well, Luke, you'll have to tell us which one of us is right. And if it's not,
I'm probably wrong. I usually am.
Luke continues. All that having been said, hearing some of this explained for further. All that having been said, hearing some of this explained for the first time was enlightening. Some of the metaphysical stuff is still a bit out there for me, but really, is the whole space Jesus thing really any more out there than the time travel in Voyager or some of the more inane stuff from The Next Generation? And the background of Sisko was interesting as well. I never got any sort of backbone from Sisko, so this sort of approach to him is more appealing. Maybe if I watch this one, I'll have a better appreciation of Sisko than the wishy-washy persona I always had him pegged of is in my mind. Oh, you need to watch more, Luke. If you think Sisko's wishy-washy, you've not watched enough episodes. Yeah. I mean, in this one alone, I think we've proved he's not wishy-washy.
He's wishy-washy, what's Picard?
Yeah. Oh,
God. No, just take a look at this episode if you can. If you can find this episode, you will realize that Sisko is a deterrent. He is, like you've said before, he is the most Kirk-like of all the Next Generation captains.
Yeah, Picard would have just surrendered to the to the Bajorans.
Yeah, the minute the Bajoran thingio shows up, Picard would have gone, "We surrender!" And that would have been it.
He would have dropped on his knees and put his hands behind his head.
Yeah, God. Grow some balls, man. Luke continues, "Kira, a better character than Janeway? I disagree with that assessment, but I don't think it's a fair comparison. An outsider from Starfleet who is the second in command to the head honcho who thinks outside the box and doesn't always toe the line sounds to me like a better comparison is Kira and Chakotay. And I'll totally buy that Kira being a better character than Chakotay, but I think it speaks more about the squandered potential of Chakotay than any great shakes about Kira, who always struck me as nagging and obnoxious. Again, it's been a while since I watched the show, so maybe on more viewings my opinion will change." God, I hope so.
I'd give him that on the squandered potential of Chakotay. He was just...
He was a block of wood, man.
Mm-hmm, he was not an interesting character.
He was, I agree with you, but I put it more to the writing than the acting. I thought he had potential. I really did. Again, wasted potential.
Okay.
Luke continues, "You guys said that Dr. Bashir eventually becomes a more interesting character, so I'll have to take your word for that. But I will agree with you that Gul Dukat was an early breakout, and he's my favourite character from the bit of DS9 I have seen. The power of being sucked in when he speaks is reminiscent of the power which Tolkien imbued into Saruman's voice in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. He stood out as the only real memorable character for me in my initial viewing of the series, along with Garak. Odd that it's the two Cardassians. Strangely, StarTrek.com up to very recently had nearly every episode of DS9 available for viewing, but as of today, there's only two random ones available. So if I want to give this show another shot, it looks like I'll have to re-up my Watch Instantly subscription to Netflix. I very much enjoyed this actual first episode. Keep on boldly going anywhere." Oh, I've said that wrong, haven't I? "Keep on boldly not going anywhere, Luke." Well,
I would definitely say keep that Netflix subscription going and watch this with us.
Yeah, I'm very gratified that you enjoyed our show despite not having watched a lot of Deep Space Nine. But I think you need to check out a bit more if you think Sisko's wishy-washy. I really do.
Yeah, especially, you know, if you can in some way find this episode, whether it be online or whether it be through other means, you know, we don't necessarily condone that. If you can go out and get the DVDs or stream it through Netflix, this show is definitely worth watching. This is, like we've all sort of gushed on about, this is perhaps one of the best episodes so far. And the fact it's the third episode in is just all the more impressive. Okay.
And Sisko being wishy-washy, I can't go along with it. Usually Luke makes points that I not that I always totally agree with. Sometimes I disagree with him, but I think they're always valid. That's one I don't think is valid at all, because I don't think Sisko is wishy-washy in the slightest. I think he's a very, very strong leader. I think, you know, the only way he'd be stronger is if he was openly defying Starfleet in every episode, which really doesn't make him much of a commander, if you think about it.
Well, and he's so far away from Starfleet that Starfleet is sort of just, aside from the presence on the space station, he doesn't really have to do it. He's doing this all on his own, so the fact that he's, you know, having this sort of taking this sort of frontier justice type thing means that he doesn't necessarily have to deal with Starfleet all that much. So, but we've got one more email. Do you want me to take it, or do you want to take it, Paul? Or
I'll take it.
Okay.
It's from Chuck Rodriguez. I have any familiarity with Chuck. I don't know if you guys do.
He may be a first time. Well, a lot of people are obviously first time write-ins to this show. But thanks, Chuck, for writing in.
Yeah, welcome aboard. "Hi guys, I just wanted to write in and tell you how excited and thrilled I am you are doing a DS9 podcast. DS9 has always been my favorite Star Trek show, and I'm looking forward to reliving it in this way and being able to compare opinions and feelings with other fans of this great show. I've always felt that this show has never received the proper credit it deserves. I suppose many thought the show was too dark and didn't have the happy everything is perfect feel of the previous incarnations. And of course, people complained because they weren't on a starship. I think this is what made the show unique and special among its fellow Trek shows. I believe that its writer, Ronald D. Moore, who said something along the lines of, 'As good as TNG was, it's still a riff on TOS. DS9 needs to be different if it was going to stand on its own, and I think it did just that.' As Michael Pillar also stated, since TNG was still on the air at the same time, you can't have two ships boldly going where no one has gone before. I also believe that this was the best and most tightly written of all the Star Trek series. The characters, as you stated in the first show, were allowed to grow and change and become fully fleshed out by series end, much more so than most of the other Trek show characters. That not only goes for the main cast, but for all the recurring supporting cast as well. Categorizing these great characters as supporting almost seems an injustice, as they at times were given A-story plot lines and became integral to the series as a whole. Great characters like Garak, General Martok, Rom, Nog, Leeta, Grand Nages Zek, Ishka, Weyoun, Damar, Vic Fontaine, and of course, Morn, to name a few. Let's not forget the greatest villain in Star Trek history. That's right. I said it and I stand by it. Gul Dukat is the greatest villain in all of Star Trek. No disrespect to Khan and his genetically engineered pecs, but Dukat is a much more complex character. Granted, Mark Alamo had 7 years to perfect this character, but what he does with it is amazing. He was able to make you sympathize for him, cheer for him, despise and hate him all at the same time. That's great acting and writing. Before I ramble any more, allow me to wish you all good luck, and I look forward to joining you on the trek through all 176 episodes of this exciting space drama. Finally, a two true freaks show I can follow from the beginning and not play catch up. May you walk with the prophets through your journey. Wow, 176 episodes.
Oh, oof. Sweet God.
What, do we bit off a big one there?
Yeah, why can't we call something that was cancelled after 13 shows?
We could just do...
Are we going to do the Firefly podcast after this? Is that what
you're... Oh, yeah!
Okay. I'm down for that. You know, once we finish this up in 2026, you know, I think that'd be good.
Yeah, big damn heroes.
Well, thanks everyone for writing in. We really appreciate it. If you want to write into the show, the email address for the show is listentotheprophets@gmail.com. Any emails, we're glad to take. Plus, also, if you'd like to review us on iTunes, there's been a switch up in the feed of this. So if you want to subscribe to the show in iTunes, make sure you go to Two True Freaks Presents Listen to the Prophets. And that's where you can go to subscribe to the show and leave reviews and all that. So do we want to do we have anything else to say before we head out?
Do you want me to do a next time?
Sure, let's do a next time. Why not?
All right, well, I need to reopen my boot then to find out what is next.
I think
time.
It's Babel.
Yes, you are absolutely okay. Right. Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, it's Babel. I don't remember which episode it is. I don't even remember what that one's about, so I'm looking forward to that one.
I remember I was scanning through the Netflix thing, and it says something about... Chief O'Brien's upset about the way the station is running, so he works on trying to fix the food replicators. I'm certain there is more that goes on it than that, but that's kind of...
I would hope so, because that sounds really dull. An entire episode of O'Brien fixing the food replicators.
this could be the Naked Now of the Deep Space Nine.
I don't recall Space Nine ever getting that bad.
We're going to keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah.
But thanks everyone for downloading and listening. We'll catch you next time on another episode of Listen to the Prophets. Bye everyone.
Goodbye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Okay, you know, we'll just keep going. You know, so far we're doing pretty good. It's only 6 o'clock here, 7 o'clock. Noon over there?
Yeah, maybe? Noon. Okay. For me.
If you're done editing, that show will probably be about 45 minutes, which is a nice running time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking we should aim for these being about an hour long.
Yeah, I think that'll work perfectly.
Here, I think that in that range, 45 minutes to an hour is perfect.
1 second, let me go and get a little bit of water. It'll just take me a second. Hold on.
Okay. Let's do an episode without him, Paul.
All right, quick.
Pass prologue. Kira's in it. It's dead good. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.